Today on the Science and Spirituality podcast, we have a guest. Her name is Dr. Jane Lewis, who is an extraordinary spirituality and women's leadership coach, a teacher of Huna, which is the energetic and spiritual practices of the ancient Hawaiians, and an ordained interfaith minister with a passion for joining the dots between spirituality and everyday life. And that's absolutely what we got into in this episode, but a little bit more about her. She, following an international consultancy career, Jane experienced burnout and then clinical depression. This led her to Huna, the spiritual and energetic practices of the ancient Hawaiians. And she learned to use these practices to have profound healings for herself, to stay healed, but then also to help others in doing the same. And so she's had a career for the last 20 years in doing this, and really, I think, shined through in our conversation because she shared so much, especially when we got into some of the practices. I was like, oh my God, I feel like we can have an episode on each of the things she even said, but it was a really great intro.
But the things that we did get into were very practical. It's like, after listening to this episode, you can start applying those things, like base right level now, into your daily life. And it can help, you know, develop your spirituality and just kind of give you like a code of like how to live and like how to live a more healthy life. And so I think that's what really intrigued me about this entire conversation.
For sure. Yeah. So it's great. Dive in and we'll talk soon.
Welcome to the Science and Spirituality Podcast, where we dive deep into universal spiritual principles and ground them in modern science. My name is Chris Carton.
And my name is Kevin Carton, and we are committed to simplifying the spiritual side of success for you with easy-to-understand scientific research so you can walk away with practical tools to create radical transformations in your life. Let's get started. So welcome back to another episode of the Science and Spirituality Podcast. And we have a special guest, Jane Lewis, here with us today. So welcome, Jane. It's so nice to have you here.
Hi, Kevin. It's lovely to be here.
Awesome. Well, yeah. So, I mean, the topic that we chose and that would love to hear more from you and your side and your studies, your expertise in Huna, and maybe even like introducing what Huna is, because I imagine many people listening have no idea what that is. Never even heard of it. So let's start there. Like, what is that?
Okay. So Huna is a name, not necessarily the name, but it's a name given to the spiritual, energetic, and healing practices of the ancient Hawaiians. So in Hawaiian, Huna means hidden. And the reason that it was given that name was it was given that name by a Western guy because he could see these, but he was living in Hawaii. He was aware that there were practices, but nobody would talk to him about it. So he called it Huna. And that name's kind of stuck because it became popular in the States. It people knew about it a bit, over in the UK, not so much. And so that name has kind of stuck, but the ancients wouldn't have called it Huna. They'd have been much more likely to call it ho'o mana. Ho'o means to make, and mana is energy like ki or chi or prana. It's that life force energy. Now, the ancient Hawaiians knew that you didn't make energy, but it's about how do you utilize energy when energy is everything. It's the basis of everything. So whether you want to manifest something, whether you want to heal, whether you want to have more vitality, whatever it is, it's all about energy. So, yeah, ho'omana is a more accurate term, but Huna's the term that's become popular for these practices, and they vary. Depends who you talk to. You'll get a different presentation, a different story about what they're about and how to use them, and different tools and different techniques. So there's not one way, and that the Hawaiians have a couple of sayings which I think are really valid. One is think not that all wisdom is in your school, so you know, be open to other people's ideas, and there is more than one path to the light. And I love that because there are many different versions, and depending who you study with, depending who you talk to, you will hear different versions of what Huna is all about.
I love that idea of the last thing that you spoke about there's more than one way to the light. Because it sounds like that this practice and the way that the Hawaiians are teaching it is that it's very like inclusive. It's like, here's the way that we use, but we're not shutting out any other way, because understanding that humans are very individualistic, like different types of people coming from different types of places are going to have different ways to get to, but the end goal sounds like it's the same.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think it's, I love the way that Huna actually sits. Huna is not a religion, by the way. It stopped being a religion in, I think it was 1819 or 1820, when they knocked down all the temples. So, and then it became illegal. So it couldn't possibly be a religion. So it's not a religion, but the practices sit so comfortably alongside other faiths. So I have friends who are Huna practitioners, who are Buddhists, Muslims, Christians, Mormons. I mean, Mormons are Christianity, but Jewish, Hindu. I've probably missed a few out, but it sits very comfortably, alongside other faiths.
Yeah, I think the more that you learn about other faiths. Like I think I took a class, Kev, I don't know if you took this class in high school too, is the Many Faces of Faith.
I was literally about to say that.
Yeah, and we learned about all different types of world religions. And the main thing that our teacher would talk about was the string that tied a lot of them together. Mm. Like when you really start to study every single religion, it's just like a different way to help people evolve spiritually and become better people, like a guiding light to how to live your life. And so, yeah, I definitely like resonate with that for sure.
Yeah, yeah. It's I love it, and I love it for the compassion that it has, and the open-mindedness that there is for other practices.
And I just a comment really quick about what you said before, that it was made illegal in 1890. What do you mean by that?
So at that time it was an independent kingdom. Independent of anybody. I guess it was the then queen could see that change was coming, may not have known exactly what it was, so decided that it was time to overhaul the old system. So they, as I say, they knocked down the temples, and they lifted what was known as the kapu. The kapu was a system. Kapu is it's the Hawaiian word for taboo. So it's this idea of things that are forbidden. And it was the Hawaiian system of rules about what you could and couldn't do. Like you couldn't eat bananas, for example. That was the prerogative of the king, those kinds of things. So they lifted all those rules. They lifted the kapu, they lifted the rules, and they destroyed the temples. And then as the Westerners came in, the Westerners already, I mean, Captain Cook had passed by in the late 1700s, so Westerners were aware of Hawaii and they were coming to it, but they, as more Westerners came, they started to take over more. The monarchy was ended. The last queen was put under house arrest by Westerners, basically, and so the whole structure just and the culture and everything that went with that gradually became illegal. I think probably when Hawaii became a territory. I'm not sure exactly when it was made formally illegal in an American sense, but the practices were illegal for a long time. Daddy Bray, who he was a practitioner in the lineage that I've studied in, he was an activist, and he was arrested for chanting in the marketplace in the 50s. He knew he'd be arrested. He did it, you know, though he was making a point, but he was arrested for chanting in the marketplace. So yeah, the spiritual practices were made illegal. And that, and depending how you look at the different laws, it wasn't made legal until the, I think it was the 1970s that you know, indigenous peoples were allowed to start, and that the Hawaiians, Native Americans and so on were able to openly practice their spiritual practices, spiritual and certain cultural practices.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah. So late too.
Yeah.
I'm sure we weren't legally allowed to practice it until the 1970s, but I'm sure that lineages continue to pass down, right? And again, I just feel like something, and I'm excited to get into what practices and principles are actually within the Huna practice, but it just seems like something that says helping people or like a North Star of like how to live and like how to develop their own spirituality and energy. Like that's, it's going to be almost impossible to make that go away because like people are going to be drawn to it.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It continued. It just went on. It went right. Huna, went secret. It went underground.
Huna went Huna.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean the lineage is, say, the lineage that I study, the Bray lineage, it goes back 29 generations now. And it's an unbroken line, not necessarily bloodline, because knowledge can be passed to people who are not necessarily blood relatives, but an unbroken line in sense of the knowledge was actively passed from the current keeper or the kahu, the keeper of the lineage, to the next one. My teacher's father studied with Papa Bray, who's the son of Daddy Bray, and so it goes on. Yeah.
Would you share a bit about that, Jane, about like your involvement in that whole lineage? Because first and foremost, hearing that is like impressive, right? Like that's not very common in today's world. We've had, I don't know, dozens of guests now on this podcast, and many people are amazing teachers and people in their own right who bring forth new information, teach and help people, but it's not through a lineage. So I'd love to hear like just even like a short story of like your coming into that lineage, you're actually like bring that forth, because clearly, I mean, you are.
Yeah. I originally studied with Tad James, who's the father of Matt James, who is the current keeper of the lineage. And he was the one who studied with Papa Bray. The problem that Papa Bray faced was that he was at that time, this was in the 80s, late 80s. He was an older man, and his family were not interested in the teaching. So just didn't want it. Mm. So he didn't have anybody to pass the knowledge on to. And then he came across Tad through Uncle George Naope, who was a real cultural hero in the Hawaiian sense, and very responsible for regenerating and rejuvenating a lot of aspects of Hawaiian culture, particularly the hula. So Tad James studied with Papa Bray, and Papa Bray shared the knowledge with the understanding that this would then be shared on. And so it was. And he shared it with his son, Matt, who has shared it with many students. And I think it was 2009, Uncle George gave Matt, Kumu Matt, permission to make kumus. Kumus are teachers, but it's more like an honorary PhD. You don't call yourself, you don't just pop up and say, hey, I'm a kumu. You're awarded it. You're made a kumu. It represents dedication. It represents knowledge and, you know, and practice. So I was made a kumu just as we were going into the pandemic.
Wow.
In 2020. Because I've been teaching and practicing and dedicating for a good 20 years. It's sort of done in the proper way, if you like. Right. So, and no, I have no Hawaiian blood. I'm quite open about that. But it will go, the lineage will go back into the Hawaiian bloodline, because Kumumat's son is, his mum is Hawaiian.
Mm.
And the bloodline in Hawaii is carried. It's what do they call it? Matrilineal.
Right.
It's carried in the mother. So it will That's go awesome. Back into Hawaii, which is great.
Yeah.
We're all of us are just keepers of the knowledge. We don't own it. We're guardians. We're custodians.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's so important too for just people being attracted to a certain type of practice. Like when the teachers, you don't feel like they're like gatekeepers to being allowed to practice it. Like they're just you have everything you need already. It's just they're facilitating that learning and that growth. And I feel like that's very attractive to people because sometimes in some like major religions, it almost feels like you need to have a, like some type of credential, or you like, you look to the people that are teaching as like better than you, or like they have something that I need versus what it sounds like for this is that it's very, you know, it's very like a flat organization. It's like, you earn the title by practicing it enough. And then you teach people that, you know, they already kind of have everything they need. Is that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, you wouldn't, you wouldn't teach everybody everything. You wouldn't teach somebody everything all in one hit. The way we do it is layered.
Mm.
Partly because from an energetic perspective, it can take time to become accustomed to the energy and work with the energy and raise your own vibration. And if somebody then, if your own vibration isn't, you know, if you haven't been working with your own energy and working on raising your own vibration, then you're going to find there are some practices that you're just going to find it really hard to do. Mm. You know, some of the more advanced energy practices, unless you've got the basics, then you're really going to struggle with the more advanced ones. That's just the way it is.
Right.
So there are layers and foundations, but that's not about keeping the knowledge back. It's more about, okay, learn, practice, embody it. And then, you know, then you're ready for the next bit. But it's a lot quicker the way we teach it is a lot quicker than the ancients would have taught it. Because, you know, the ancients, you wanted to relate to the element of water, you would go down to the ocean and you would chant the name of water to the ocean, and you'd keep doing that for as long as it took until the water chanted your name back to you. So, and that could take a long time.
Interesting.
So teach in a more accelerated way.
Right. That actually just reminded me of the scene from, oh my gosh, what's the movie? It's a Disney movie. I'll have to come back to that. Earlier scenes when she's like by the water and like the water like becomes animated and it's like helping her. So.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that movie yet.
What?
Oh, you missed.
Yeah, I have not. I have not seen it.
It's so fabulous. Good.
I'm like a little really behind good. On certain like Disney, some Disney movies. Like I've probably seen ones that have come out more recently. I just haven't gone to that one. Like the Coco I've seen, and like the other one, I forgot what it was called, but I got to get to that one. It's like on my list. Like I've seen That's it. So enough, I've seen it around enough times that it's like, all right. Yeah. I kind of wanted to get into some like basic principles of Huna practice. Cause I know Kevin and I, like we talk a lot about energy and raising vibration. And so that's like a very, I feel like buzzword on our podcast, and we resonate with that a lot. And we have an understanding of it from our perspective, but from like a Huna perspective, like what are like some of those basic like practices and basic principles that you teach someone who is just getting started?
Okay. So just starting with energy, with mana, from a Huna perspective, you've got three levels of energy. You have mana, which is fairly, which is, if you like, the lowest level. It's quite physical. And then you have mana, which is sort of a higher level of vibration. It's probably more emotional and mental, perhaps. And then you have mana loa, which is lower means to spread out, but it's a sort of expanded energy, which it's probably more tied into the spiritual. So you've got those three levels of energy. And we, you know, we all want to cultivate our mana, our physical mana, our vitality. But there's also how do you cultivate the rest? Because everything is just energy. The Hawaiians, and I think it's actually true of the Polynesians in general, don't separate out spirituality from being. I mean, we're just, you know, in the West, we tend to go, oh, well, I've got to develop my spirituality. No, that's just part of who you are. You can choose to exclude it. You can choose to operate totally from a very mana level, if you like, from a very physical level. But really, from a, say, I think from a Polynesian perspective, spirituality and beingness is, that's just who we are. You know, why would we even talk about it? And I've had, you know, I've had Hawaiians challenge me sometimes and say, well, you make all this, you know, there's all this philosophy, but it's just who we are. You don't need to talk about it. You just live it. But of course I have a Western brain, so I like to have some theory. It helps me. And then there are some kind of fundamental principles that are useful. So one of the principles is the principle of cycles and rhythms, that everything has a cycle and a rhythm. And I guess, you know, when the islands are the small islands, and when you live on small islands, you become very conscious of the cycles and rhythms. I mean, you know, the tide changes each day. And in a way that, you know, I live in the UK and we have seasons, but the seasons, the span of the seasons is a lot longer. The Hawaiians had, systems of fishing and farming that were tied into the moon. Each day of the moon in a different month would be for planting or harvesting a different something. So it's a very sophisticated, well-developed attitude towards fishing and farming. But everything has its cycles and rhythms, and if you fight the cycles and rhythms, sooner or later, it's going to give you a problem. So you work, you go with the flow, literally. There is the principle that it gets translated in sort of Western languages as above, so below, which we know from many other, many other practices. But this idea that we really are reflections of source, the universe, God, whatever name you want to give to that, we really are reflections of that, and that we are all connected. There is no separation, and whatever one does affects the whole. So that's an important one. There is, you know, the idea of creation, which, there's not really time to explain creation because it's quite a complicated idea. But basically, when anything is created, its opposite is also created. So you have the obvious ones, things like night and day, high tide, low tide, sun, moon, those things. But when you come to more abstract ideas, so let's say money, you start to find that what you have on the one side, okay, I have money on one side. Well, what did I create mentally? I create the idea of money, and what do I put on the other side of that? And from a Huna perspective, a lot of conflict happens when we have these dichotomies, very with a kind of like hard opposition. So I've got money over here and I've got poverty over there, so my energy is either going to go towards money or it's going to go towards poverty. And because of cycles and rhythms, I could end up living my life on a kind of pendulum between money and poverty if I don't resolve the energetics of that particular conflict, of that particular dichotomy. There's a lot about the power of suppressed negative emotions. So we, you know, anger and fear are really important to get us out of trouble. And, you know, sadness is a natural emotion. Guilt is learnt, but it has its uses, you know, but these, those kinds of emotions, if we express them, you know, and we experience them appropriately, great. But when we suppress them, when we push them down, that's when the trouble starts. So there's a process, and this is really down to the practicality that I love about Una. So there is a process where basically you connect with spiritual energy and use the spiritual energy to flush out suppressed anger or suppressed guilt or whatever the suppressed thing is. Because what they found when Captain Cook landed in Hawaii, they found that the Hawaiians, there was very little disease. You know, if you fell out of a coconut tree and you broke your leg, you fell out of a coconut tree and you broke your leg. But there would be somebody there. There would be a medicine person who would be there who'd sort your leg out, fix it, you know, fix it. And in general, most people would heal from the broken leg. And they had a system of faith healing, which certainly was around in the 60s, because one of our teachers, John Kaimikawa, amazing man, and a spiritual leader in Hawaii and in the Mormon church. But John Kaimikawa, I can't remember his auntie or great auntie, she was a faith healer. And he used to tell a story of a kid who'd fallen off his bicycle and had a compound fracture of his leg. And auntie was called upon to do the healing work and basically sent everybody away, prayed with the child. And within days, the child was running around.
Wow.
She knew what to do with energy. Mm. So, you know, powerful practical healing processes. So the Hawaiians didn't have an awful lot of illness when Captain Cook and his merry men first landed. They did after that, because the sailors brought all manner of disease that the Hawaiians weren't able to cope with. But the idea is that if you suppress, and I mean, you know, Western medicine knows this. Mm-hmm. If you suppress emotions, you can get physically sick. You can get mentally sick. You know, you suppress sadness for too long, you can end up with depression, and so on and so forth. So releasing these suppressed emotions, very important. Using spirit energy to release beliefs you have about yourself and the way the world operates that hold you back, very important. And Ho'oponopono, which is probably, if people have heard of nothing else, they've usually heard of Ho'oponopono. And there are many versions of Ho'oponopono. I teach a version, but it's not the only one. There are varieties. But Ho'oponopono is, if you like, the Hawaiian forgiveness process. Really important. Again, Western psychology now knows that unforgiveness, the state of holding on, can be very detrimental to mental, emotional, physical health. But the Hawaiians have this process, and in Hawaiian culture, you have to forgive. It doesn't matter what was done, you have to forgive it, which can be really challenging. And that's not to condone the person. It's absolutely not to condone the behavior or the behavior. You leave that to the appropriate people to deal with. It's an acknowledgement of our common humanity. It's acknowledgement of the fact that whether we like it or not, we are all capable of doing some pretty appalling things if the motivation is big enough. I mean, I don't have kids, but I know plenty of parents who have kids who say if somebody threatened their kids, they'd be willing to kill that somebody. There's no argument about it. So we're all of us capable, if the situation, you know, given the right circumstances, we're all of us capable of breaking the Ten Commandments. We're all of us capable of bad behavior. So it's not condoning, but it's accepting we are human. We have this common humanity. We're capable of great things. We're capable of terrible things. Ultimately, we're all beings of light, but it's how we express the light that makes the difference. You know, I've had people saying, well, what about Putin then? Putin is a human. At some level, he is a being of light. It's his behavior that's the challenge. And the problem is that you can't go out there, well, you can, but if you go out sending love to Ukraine from a place of hatred for Putin, then the energy isn't in harmony. So you do the ho'oponopono, you forgive Putin, or I mean, I'm using it because it's quite a, you know, it's an example that most people would be familiar with. You do the forgiving, you go from, you clear out what you need to clear out, you do the forgiving, then you send the love, then you do whatever it is you do. And by the way, you know, taking Putin to a war crimes tribunal, probably, you know, it is an appropriate thing to do. We're not condoning the behavior at all. But it is simply saying it's acknowledgement of there, but for the grace of God, go I.
Yeah. There's a lot to unpack there. But I just feel like at least for me, like all the stuff that you were talking about, it makes a lot of sense. And I just kind of wanted to touch on the point too about when Captain Cook had arrived in Hawaii and there wasn't a lot of dis-ease. And when you think about like the process of disease, it's really just, you know, pent up energy that's not being moved inside of a human system. And it just makes so much sense that if you apply all these practices like in a systematic way and on a daily basis, and if like you really buy into the system, like it, you can really see how it could help like someone who's struggling with pretty much almost anything. And I think that, again, like the appeal, at least for me, from a system like this, is that it kind of feels like it's divorced a little bit from religion, and more it is just like a spiritual practice that anyone can kind of take on. It doesn't really feel like it's like excluding anybody. It really just feels like a way to live your life. And I think that's what's super key for people who, especially, are trying to get into their spiritual practice, is like, how do I make it practical for me in my life daily? And it's really got to be something that you live. It's got to be like a part of who you are. And what it sounds like is that a lot of these practices are very easily incorporated into daily life so that you can start to live and become that type of person.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, they're most of, well, certainly the processes and practices that I use most, they're very simple. They're very straightforward.
Can you talk about some of them, if you don't mind?
I mean, the ones, Ho'oponopono being one of them. I'd be lying if I said I practiced it. I did it every day, but I certainly, I frequently. And so the idea with Ho'oponopono is you create a mental state, and you invite the people onto it, who you want to forgive, and then you have a conversation in your mind, bearing in mind this is the version of Ho'oponopono that I teach, and many other versions are available. So you have a conversation in your mind with the person or the people. And once you have that sense of forgiveness taking place both ways, I forgive you, please forgive me. So it's two-way. you then cut the energetic cords. And so anytime you reconnect with that person, you reconnect in a new context, and you don't have to, and you don't have to like the person afterwards. And none of that. So Ho'oponopono, usually now, unless there's something particular going on where I think I got to forgive that person, they've really pissed me off. I need to get back to balance. But usually if I'm doing it now, I'll just put everybody on the planet on the stage. Why not? And and just release anything that whether I, because, you know, we sometimes the Hawaiians had a forgiveness code, and they had three levels of sin, for want of a better word. The first level is the level where it's not intentional. I hurt you, but it's not intentional. You know, I say something, I think I'm making a funny joke, and actually it's totally inappropriate, and it triggers you in some way. But it wasn't my intention. My intention was just to make a joke. Mm-hmm. we've all done something like that. We've said something and it's hurt somebody and we didn't even realize. So often we do things that hurt other people and we don't even realize we've done it. So there's that level that needs forgiving. The next level then is sort of going overboard. And that could be going overboard in terms of yourself. So, you know, too much alcohol, too much drugs, too much shopping, too much of, you know, whatever. It could be like the example I use is, you know, you've been in a relationship, the person dumps you, makes it very clear they wish to have absolutely nothing to do with you evermore. But you'll phone them just to listen to their answer phone, or you'll, you know, walk past their house just to see if they're in. that would be going overboard, because you know you're not supposed to, but you do it anyway. And then the third level is to do something with deliberate intent to hurt. But all of those have to be forgiven. So, as I say, I just stick the whole planet on the stage because I don't know, but what I need to forgive them and they need to forgive me for something. So Ho'oponopono, really important process. Then, as I say, the using the spiritual energy to clear out anger, sadness, fear, guilt, and those suppressed emotions. Also, it's great for karmic healing and ancestral healing, because you just broaden it out to the ancestors, to anything karmic that might be running around the place. Mm-hmm. Obviously, meditation. I think just about every spiritual culture on the planet has some form of meditation. The Hawaiians put a lot of importance on breathing. So ha actually means one meaning of ha is to breathe or breath. And they had a form of breathing, simple form of breathing, in through the nose, out through the mouth, out breath twice as long as the in breath. And it's a way of calming down. It's a way of cleansing. It's a way of preparing to do something important. You do it before you're going to do something important. Interestingly, we now know that particular form of breathing triggers the polyvagal system, which is the relaxed system. Well, who knew?
Yeah.
Stuff they need.
You see that as a common thread throughout a lot of ancient like healing practices. It's like they were doing things that now we know from proving it scientifically that wow, it actually had some physiological effect within the body through the nervous system. So it's always interesting to hear about that stuff. Does Huna have a specific way that they teach meditation or how to meditate? Because I know there's a lot of different types of, you know.
There is two that we particularly teach. One is a meditation on the light. So basically you close your eyes and meditate on the light inside your eyelids.
Interesting. And,
you know, we're all beings of light. You could say that the light that we see when we, I love it, you know, you just, how to meditate, inspect your eye, inspect your eyelids. That's the way to do it. If anybody who's listening, try it, close your eyes. And the chances are you will see something inside your eyelids. It may not be a great bright shiny light. It may just be little flecks of color or movement or something, but there's a something that goes on. And if we're all beings of light, and we are connected to the light. It's almost like you're looking at yourself when you go into that space. So, yeah.
Never thought about it that way. That's interesting.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
So that's the one.
So it's using, it's basically bringing a single pointed focus on your attention. It's just there. They teach to use the inside of the eye, the light on the inside of the eye that you see as the single point. So you focus on that, breathe. Okay.
Yeah. And then the other one is the walking meditation of the kahunas. The Hawaiians called it hakala, which means to spread out your gaze. It's expanded awareness, it's peripheral vision. Nowadays, they teach it to the military, they teach it to advanced car drivers, because when you spread out like that, you know. But the kahunas, the experts, the practitioners, the shamans would go into that state and walk. Because if you do that, if you walk, particularly if you walk through the woods in peripheral vision, in expanded awareness, sooner or later, you'll notice the trees either walking beside you or waving at you.
Nice.
It's very relaxing. It's a great way to connect with nature.
Mm-hmm. That also would trigger the nervous system as well, right? Because when you're stressed, sympathetic, your body focuses completely in on the danger. Yeah. So it has a single pointed focus of kind of narrow vision, right? So if you kind of practice that, activating the peripheral, it probably has like that effect on the nervous system too, where you feel it safe does, and it's like, you're okay. That's really cool. I have a nature path right by my apartment, like right back there on the lake. And I'm going to try that one. Cause I've always in the past had trouble with the sitting types of meditations. Cause I'm very antsy. I tend to like to move around a lot. And so that sounds like it's way more up my alley, and I love nature too. So kind of getting a new tool to try out for sure.
No, I love it. It's I'm a bit like you. If I sit too long, I get bored and my thoughts kind of go. Mm-hmm. So yeah, walking meditation works much better for me.
Yeah. What types of people are attracted to like huna practices at first? So I know you said you're a teacher, you do workshops. Is there a specific type of person that's kind of attracted to these types of workshops that want to learn more? Is it pretty random?
There's kind of two answers to that. The first one, the Hawaiians would say that if you feel called to either to go to Hawaii or to connect with the teachings, you have an old soul and you've been to Hawaii before. And it's that call, it's like a soul's call. And certainly you get people for whom that is true. It's Hawaiian. I don't know why, but I have to learn about this stuff because it's Hawaiian for no other reason, apparently. Most of the people, but it's even that's not necessarily always true. Most of the people who are attracted to it have some kind of spiritual interest or awareness. Although I've come across, I know some people who have, you know, they've gone because their partner or their brother or their friend is going and says, you can come with me. And they've gone kind of going, yeah, right, okay. And then popped out 7 years later going, wow. I'm exaggerating a little bit, but certainly one of the teachers, one of the kumu in our lineage, she originally went exactly under that kind of her brother said, oh, you got to come to this. She's like, yeah. She said, well, it's Hawaii. Okay, I'll go. And 7 years later, she is now a kumu. She is now a teacher. So people who, in general, people have some kind of spiritual something, awareness, consciousness. Some people, I think it's because they hear that there's a lot about energy, and they maybe they've done Reiki, or they, you know, they're interested in the idea of energy. And I guess there's certainly, and I can only talk for my students, I can't talk for anybody else's, but I know that for some of my students, there's a little bit of, I want what she's got. I don't know what it is, but I want some of that. I mean, I tell the story often enough that I was clinically depressed, and that's kind of how I got into HUNA, but via NLP, but that's ultimately how I ended into HUNA. And HUNA really has kept me sane for the last 20 something years. Now, people don't know, when I tell people, you know, I was clinically depressed, they're like, you really? You get a lot of joy out of life. You're comfortable in your own skin. And it's like, how do you do that? Well, it's HUNA. Oh, okay.
What is that? Yeah. Yeah. I know that the HUNA is, it's like a lineage thing. It's passed down, and that's how a lot of the knowledge is transferred. Is there are there any books that are written on this topic that you could read yourself, or is it really, you got to go and you got to learn from someone face to face? As like, I know that's probably the best way, but if someone wanted to like wet their feet a little bit and be like, all right, I want to kind of learn a little bit more about this, is there resources like that?
Yeah, there are quite a few books about it. When I did my PhD on esoteric studies. So unlikely spiritual practices, if you like. And my thesis was all about spirituality and leadership, and I focused on HUNA. So I read every book at that time that I could get my hands on. And, you know, there wasn't a huge amount at that time. There are more now. Certainly for our lineage, anything by Dr. Matt James. So Matt is the current keeper of the head of the lineage, keeper of the lineage. He's written one on HUNA, which I think is called Introduction to HUNA. He's written one on Ho'oponopono. He did his clinical psych PhD on Ho'oponopono and proving that it works. So he's got several, he's written several books on HUNA. A completely different lineage, it's a HUNA lineage, but it's a very different lineage. Would be Serge Kahili King, whose probably his most famous book is Urban Shaman. There are a lot of books now out on Ho'oponopono, because it was popularized by Joe Vitale. You know, he sort of really turned it into a thing. And various other people who have written about, you know, have come across it and written about it. This guy called Pila, can't remember the name of his book, and there is very, very hard to get to get at. It's out of print, and you know, there is a book by Daddy Bray, David Bray, about HUNA, which is very interesting. The Stories of the Kahunas, The Ancient Religion of the Kahunas, very interesting, tiny little book, very hard to get hold of. So yeah, there are books out there for sure. Obviously, my favorites are the ones that that relate to my lineage. So
right.
The Daddy Bray book and Dr. Matt James's books. But yeah, there's some interesting stuff out there. Hey, there's some fairly rubbish stuff out there as well.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But that's true of anything, any spiritual path that you read about. There are the good ones, and there are the ones where you think, okay.
Yeah. And as a reader, you'll know too. Like you'll there'll be certain things you resonate with, and there'll be certain things where you just kind of feel like, I've come across those before.
Yeah.
So. But I was just wondering if there was resources out there besides going to, traveling to Hawaii and going to the workshop.
Yeah. And I mean, you can do a lot now online as well. I mean, I do a lot of my teaching online. There are some things. So we have in our lineage, well, it comes not from the Bray lineage. It comes from a slightly different lineage, but we're the only people who teach it and practice it because it was given to us. So there's a system we work with. It's the nearest parallel I can talk about is Reiki.
Okay.
There are symbols, but with Reiki, the energy is actually in the symbol. with the opuo, which is the system that we have. The energy is, the symbol is simply a way of representing the energy. The energy isn't in the symbol. And it's the energy, there are 36 of them, and they're the 36 facets of the highest feminine energy on the planet. So as I say, we work with it in a kind of Reiki-ish way, but that isn't written down anywhere. We don't teach that online, but so much of what I do teach can be taught online. So over pandemic, I ran a virtual 5-day training, and we had students from the Netherlands and Switzerland and all over in my living room.
Yeah. It's so cool. Like, awesome. Technology's allowed that to happen.
Yeah. There's so much that, yeah.
Yeah. Jane, we are coming up on time. I just wanted to see if you had anything that you wanted to share, like how to find you, any workshops you have coming up, or any final thoughts that you wanted to kind of share with our listeners before we wrap up.
Thank you. Well, my website is called secretartofhuna.com. So you can find me through that. If you happen to be in the UK or able to get to UK, I've actually got an introductory weekend, Huna for Wealth and Abundance, on the 23rd and 24th of July. I don't know whether this will be out by then. The website is a good place to find me. I'm on Facebook. I'm Jane P. Lewis on Facebook. And I'm on LinkedIn as well. So you can find those are ways that you can find me. So I do a mix of virtual stuff, and I do live weekends, teaching the things we've talked about, and on the longer ones, the 5-day ones, teaching a lot more about working with the elements and the energy of the elements and manifestation and that sort of thing.
That sounds cool.
That's awesome.
Awesome. We'll definitely include your links in the show notes. So if anyone didn't catch the website, they can look in the notes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Jane, we really appreciate your time. Always great to talk about new things. And I learned a lot about Huna, and I'm very interested.
For sure. Come to Hawaii.
Yeah. And I definitely look up like next workshops, because I've never been to Hawaii. So
Huna, the guys who teach in Hawaii, the Matt James people I study with, Huna.com will get you to Hawaii.
Okay, nice. Cool.
Sweet.
Thank you.
Been lovely. It's been really lovely sharing it with you. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Of course. You're welcome. Sure. Thank you for being here.
And that's it for today. So thanks for tuning in. We really hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed recording it. So any questions, any comments, connect with us on Instagram personally at Kevin F. Carton
or at Chris J. Carton, or our podcast or Instagram page at Science and Spirituality Podcast. And if you feel guided to, the one thing that we do ask is for you to please rate the podcast and also leave a review. This way we can reach more people, and in that way impact more lives. So with that, we'll see you on the next episode.